With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, the creator and host of the award-winning podcast that you're listening to right now, thank you so much, called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. It is a daily podcast, 365 days a year, and each day we talk to an author about all of the things related to their career, their book, their life, and more in 30 minutes or less, because who has time? I am now an author myself, although I wasn't when I started this podcast, and you can get my new memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, wherever books are sold starting July 1st, and my children's book, Princess Charming. You can learn more about me at ZibbyOwens.com, but really, you're here to learn more about the authors, and that is what we're going to do. Also, be sure to check out all the other podcasts in the ZCast Podcast Network. You can learn more at ZCastNetwork.com and definitely check out those shows as well. Amy Wallen is the author of How to Write a Novel in 20 Pies, Sweet and Savory Secrets for Surviving the Writing Life. Amy is also the author of the LA Times bestselling novel Moon Pies and Movie Stars and the memoir When We Were Ghouls, a memoir of ghost stories. As a writer in residence at Ocean Discovery Institute, Amy teaches personal storytelling to young people traditionally excluded from science due to race, income status, and educational opportunity. She also facilitates and co-teaches manuscript workshops in San Diego and France, at which she serves pie. For several years, Amy was associate director at the New York State Summer Writers Institute and a novel writing instructor at UCSD and UCLA Extensions. She is the creator of Savory Salons, Literary Salons with Pie, a day of discourse with successful authors on the writing life, and the founder of Dime Stories, 3-minute stories told by the author and featured on NPR. Welcome, Amy. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your book, How to Write a Novel in 20 Pies, Sweet and Savory Secrets for Surviving the Writing Life.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Amy, you went right before me at the San Diego Book Festival, and I watched your whole presentation and how the audience was just laughing at everything and how dynamic you were and all of your great advice and your own personal story, like throwing the cake away from your sister-in-law or whatever. And I was like, well, I have to have her on my podcast. Although I will say at the end, you were like, make sure everybody goes and gets your book signed over at the signing tent. So everybody left before my presentation. Oh. And I was like, wait, where are they all going? So anyway, it's all right. I'm over it. And I'm happy to have you on.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay. How to write a novel in 20 pies. Can you tell everybody why you wrote the book and, you know, why you're the person to write the book and how you came into writing it and more about the content and all that good stuff?
Oh, sure. The book came to me. I was standing in front of my students at University of California in San Diego. I was teaching a novel writing class, and I just saw these faces and thought, they all want to know the secrets to writing. And, you know, I love the Somerset Maugham quote that I keep at the bottom of my email that basically says there's three, you know, secrets to writing a novel and no one knows what they are. But, you know, I do have this curriculum built up on, you know, how to write a novel and this sequence of events. And I was teaching, you know, beginning novel or even how to start a novel all the way through, you know, advanced novel. And I just realized, you know, I can take all of this and put it down and share it with more than just these classrooms that were so hungry for it. And obviously, people were paying for the class and they wanted to come. So I thought, why not create a book? But I truly feel like perseverance is the main secret, right? Like just keep writing. So I wanted the book to include not just how to do it. And there's really very little craft in it specifically, because I feel like you can get that from a lot of other books. But this one is that you know, it's encouragement on just keep going despite all the obstacles, the time it takes to write it, the struggles to find an agent, and the struggles to get an editor. And, you know, I had so many personal stories that I shared with my classes over all the, you know, the obstacles I'd gone through, and whether they were personal, like going through a divorce and still trying to finish my novel, or even just, you know, I've had three agents and three books. And so I had to go look for a different agent. In fact, this book had two agents because the first agent, you know, tried to pitch it and send it out. And a lot of people liked it, but didn't know what to do with it. So I found another agent and she found another set of editors that, you know, ended up having an auction over it. So, you know, it's kind of like just keep going. You know, there are times when I need to listen to my own advice and it's not, you know, as easy as, you know, just get out there and find another agent. So I wanted it to be fun and I wanted it to be something that people pick up along their journey. And, you know, maybe it'll have wine stains and chocolate stains on it and dog-eared pages and something that they would have a good time with. So that's, you know, I just sort of threw all my own personal experience and thoughts and feelings about the process into the book.
Love it. And tell everyone why pies? Why this framing?
Well, pies was, again, my own personal experience. I do feel like, you know, we need comfort along the way because there is this, like, there's a lot of rejection in the writing world and this whole process from beginning to end. And I felt like also, and then my own personal story, which I tell at the very beginning, was that I was feeling like I was never going to finish my first novel. And I really wanted to just give up. And I went to my kitchen and thought, and I like to bake pies. And so I made myself a chicken pot pie. And, you know, it was a big, long process. And I was doing a lot of new things with it and creating a different kind of crust. And, you know, and there was a creative process in that. And then when I was done, and of course I got to eat it, I realized I could now go back to sitting in my chair and working on the novel again. And there was something about like stepping away, doing something else creative and seeing it finished and having that satisfaction of something short finished. And then knowing I was a creative person, you know, that I wasn't just, you know, pedaling my feet and not going anywhere. And then I could go back to the novel and focus on that bigger, longer trajectory. So that was my own story. And then I thought, well, this would be kind of fun to put that in there for a little comfort along the way as people are reading. So, you know, whether they like pie or not, it's in there for some people like to just read recipes. Some people like to cook. You know, I've heard, I keep hearing the word procrastibaking. So I don't think of it as procrastinating in my case. I think of things like, you know, alphabetizing your sock drawer or, you know, I don't know, searching for dog toys online. Those are things that I think are procrastinating. And those are important too, I think. But yeah, so I don't think of baking as procrastinating, at least in my case. And so it's more comfort.
I love that. I feel like my biggest procrastination is doing other things in Canva, you know, like doing graphic design stuff and like Instagram. But as soon as I go into Canva, I'm like, ah, now I can relax. I'm just going to like tinker around here for a while. And then I can like go back to thinking and all that stuff. So yeah, I feel like it's justified because it still helps everything I'm doing and I still need to do it. But
right.
Anyway. Exactly. So you have so many clever things. And the great part about this book is like, it's just so fun when sometimes trying to slog, so much of the narrative around writing or is like a slog or like trying to get through it or whatever. And this is like, no, this is fun and playful and awesome. Like you have this whole thing on elevator pitches, like a very disgruntled illustration, disgruntled elevator man in this illustration with like all these different things, like an orphan boy goes to wizard school, a crazy scientist brings to life a hideous looking but intelligent creature, and boy, does he regret it. And all these different things, of course, to encapsulate like your messaging around elevator pitches and all that. And just tell me about like the format and all these wonderful illustrations and women holding pies and of course your recipes and all of this. Like why like this? People you meet in writing group. That was another great one. The writer who never writes, but who has lots of opinions. Right, the new eager writer who loves everything. The writer who knows everything about every book ever written. The queen of metaphor. Anyway.
There's one in every group. Yes, that one came because I basically called myself, I was a whore of writing groups because I went to every possible writing group there ever was just so that I could, you know, get everybody's input. And I loved the deadlines. I loved all of it, but sometimes it wasn't always productive. And I had to learn a lot about how to manage my own self in writing groups. And the illustration, yeah, there's over 200 illustrations in this book. And I just saw it as whimsical. You know, like I said, I wanted it to be fun, but also get the message across. You know, it's a series, you know, writing is hard. And so I wanted the book to be fun. I wanted people to just open any page and see something that made them laugh. And the illustrations are from a friend of mine who I mentioned in the book, who was in my writing group. We were in Janet Fitch's writing group together. And we used to hang out and make pie and eat a lot of pie together. And I knew he did these incredible illustrations, and his sense of humor and my sense of humor both meet in that sardonic, you know, realm. And so I said, hey, would you be interested in working with me on this proposal? And he looked at my proposal and sent me some illustrations to go with it. And it just felt like it clicked, and it went on from there. We then got the book deal and then wrote the book together. And just, yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, his illustrations make me laugh too. So it was just,
And take me into more of your actual, the novels that you wrote and what those novels are about, in case people want to like go back and like read your novels and then read your book about writing and then read the books you wrote and all of that.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's actually, the title is also very sardonic. It's basically How to Write a Novel in 20 Pies, but it's any kind of writing at all is really what it covers. Because I do talk about writing novels and also memoir and really any kind of writing. And I even give some anecdotes about this particular book, which is a little memoir, a little how-to, and a little cookbook. So my first novel is my elevator pitch, is about a woman who spots her runaway daughter on a Buttermaid commercial. And so she's from Texas and she sets off for Hollywood to find her and try to get her to own up to her responsibilities, which is she left two little kids behind when she ran away. So that one's it's also sort of a comic novel, but of course, obviously has a little poignancy in it with the abandoned kids. But it's Hollywood in 1976 when it was at its, you know, grungiest. And then my second book is...
What's that title? Tell everyone
the title of the second one.
No, the first one. All the titles.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I forgot the title, right? That's sort of important, isn't it? Moon Pies and Movie Stars. Yes. Thank you. They're another pies, but different kind of pies. And that one's actually, it's not Moon Pies. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're this like little cake thing that's sold in like gas stations. And yeah, I don't really like Moon Pies, but every book club I went to served Moon Pies.
Oh, man.
So, I guess I learned maybe that in your book, you should put foods that you like. So
yes. I will put like, I'll call my book like chocolate chip cookies and
right, exactly.
Something, you know, hot chocolate. I don't know.
Yeah. No raisins or something like, yeah.
Right.
So, and then the next book is a very different title. It's my memoir and it's When We Were Ghouls, a memoir of ghost stories. And it's about, I guess I have this running theme of abandoned kids, but it's about when my family lived overseas. We lived in Africa and South America, and I was basically alone a lot and left alone. And my family kind of dispersed when we went overseas. My mom got malaria. And then just sort of going through all of that. I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff, too, because it was also a lot about learning about other cultures and being a kid, not know, you know, having to go to these strange schools, not speaking Spanish yet, having to learn Spanish, which was a great way to learn, just sort of thrown in there. And then my family dug up an Inca grave. So I was exploring that memory of how did we ever get to a place where we were actually digging up a grave? So it's funny, not funny. And so I had a strange memory. Obviously the memory's strange because I remember digging up this grave as a kid. And then I started calling around to write this story. And I found out my memory was very distorted. Mm-hmm. I thought my brother was there and he wasn't. You know, I'm not giving any of the way. This is sort of in the very beginning of the book. But I wanted to explore memory. Like, how is it that we remember something so completely different than it was? And why did I want my brother to be there so badly? And so I just wrote that story about, you know, everybody saying, no, that's not the way it was. And me trying to uncover or dig up, so to speak, metaphor, what it was I really wanted from that memory, why I was holding onto that memory so strongly. So, yeah. And then it goes on from there with a lot of other memories, obviously, and all my family coming and going. And that's the ghost metaphor of everybody kind of slipping in and out. So,
oh, amazing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Are you working on another novel now?
Oh, yeah, this one. This one is, I'm laughing because it's funny, I guess, I hope. But it's a menopausal Nancy Drew. It's also, the reason I'm laughing is because it's so many obstacles in this book, because it's Nancy Drew, is, you know, and she's 48. So she's also going through life changes. And life hasn't gone the way as, you know, she had this idyllic childhood. And, you know, life isn't as easy when you're a middle-aged woman as it was when you were 18. But Nancy Drew is still in the copyright world. She'll never, the copyright will never be in the public domain, like all the other, like the Jane Austens, et cetera. So I'm trying to work my way around how to write it and still be Nancy Drew. So I'm doing a lot of, so I'm having to listen to my own advice and keep going. I've got the book written. I'm just trying to figure out how to finesse it. So, yeah. So sometimes you come up against your own self when you're working on things. So
can you call her like Nancy Blue or something?
I've tried that version. I'm working a little bit now where she's a little more delusional. So it's kind of fun. I've never worked with a unreliable narrator, and it's actually kind of fun. So yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
And a menopausal woman can be somewhat unreliable anyway. So why not? So we'll see. Anyway, I'm on the next draft.
So let's go back for a second to surviving the writing life.
All right.
And some of your secrets. So what are some of the secrets, pie button chair, crafty craft, like all of these workshops, like give us a couple secrets, not the pretend ones that don't exist, but you know, I love this one too. The 5 stages of rejection: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, perseverance, or pie-severance. Like what should we know? What do you know now that you wish you'd known? And like, what are some of the most important things to take away from this book?
I think each chapter probably is some sort of a secret, so to speak. But I guess the one that just came to mind as you were mentioning some of the chapters in the book was having an agent. And, you know, so many students ask me, or even just people in an audience say, like where we were at the book festival, they ask, why do I need an agent? Why can't I just send it to an editor or, you know, get self-published or do things like that? And, you know, my experience, like I said, I've had 3, and not because it just different things change. Like my first one didn't, you know, do memoir. So I switched to a new agent for that. And I told the other story about the other one, but each one has provided me some sort of guidance that I wouldn't have had in the professional world, because there is the business side of writing. And I go into that, you know, how it ends up becoming a business and not just this creative, fun, and arduous process to get a book written. And agents have been very helpful. Doesn't even seem like the right word, but like, for instance, my first agent, there was a contract issue, and without her, you know, I'd probably be, you know, living on the street now, because she worked everything out so that I lost no money and got another book deal. And, you know, things just got, you know, I just sort of got to be there as the person who just, you know, watched it happening. And she was able to handle all that because she had 32 years of experience in that world of the business and dealing with the publishing houses. And, you know, it was Penguin. So it was like the biggest house who probably had the best attorneys and things like that. So it was all well done. And then I think also, I would also suggest that, you know, I think it's so, my favorite chapter title, I guess, is The Joy of Rejection. And I think because rejection is so easy to just say, oh, well, I guess I'm not a good writer. And that whole subjectiveness of how, you know, subjectivity of how it is a business. And so it is black and white. But there is still, you know, it is still subjective. So even though an editor is on the business side of it, it is about what they feel when they read it and how it makes them cry when they're on an airplane, you know, coming back from, you know, a trip and they're busy reading all these manuscripts that were sent into them. And to just also understand there's a lot of people sending in books and writing and just keep it going. Just keep, you know, the one bit of advice I did for myself that has always been helpful is just keep, you know, keep it out, keep whatever you're submitting, whether it's a short story or a book, out with somebody else. You know, when you get a rejection, you know, make sure you have more than one out there. So when you get one rejection, you can think, oh, I still have those two out there that I'm waiting to hear from. And just always keep that process going, kind of like a little factory, I guess. So you have to have your own little business side. So yeah, that would be my bits of secrets there.
And what about surviving a divorce while writing a novel?
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, that was fun. And that was actually, you know, part of life obviously gets in the way and we can't do much about it. But just persevering again, going through that, you know, especially a divorce, I was, you know, you get a little crazy. And so I was really just trying to, you know, determine, well, I'm going to get a book published no matter what. But obviously there's rejection in the process. And then obviously I'm going through a major rejection and kind of keeping your sanity, but allowing yourself that space to also be a human and realize that, you know, life does get in the way, but we can, you know, still keep believing in our work and focus on that. It was a big escape for me to write and focus on that. Sometimes, like I said, it was a little manic in the sense of I'm determined. But also it was a great place to go. It was like, you know, my book and my writing is something that does stay with me. You know, sometimes it can be a little mean to me, I guess, but for the most part, it's really there, you know, and isn't going to leave me. So finding solace in some of that and then stepping away from it. I realized I got so busy with, you know, personal things that also realizing that when I came back, it was still there waiting for me again. I think the writing is loyal, even though sometimes it can be a little rude, but it can also be very loyal and show up for you when it, you know, when you show up for it, it shows up for you. So.
And tell me, tell the story again. I know you wavered between making your own pie crust and store-bought, and tell the story with your sister-in-law, because that was so funny. And also sort of your best practices, so to speak, for baking pies for other pie bakers out there.
Well, oh my gosh, the sister-in-law story was, I had my brother and sister-in-law came to visit, and I thought, oh, this, and my husband and his brother didn't get along very well, but I thought, well, this would be a great, like a chicken pot pie is a great sort of like bringing everybody together meal. So, and I was, you know, pretty good at making, this is my early days of pie baking. So I hadn't made that many pies, but I was really good at chicken pot pie. It was my favorite. So I made this a big chicken pot pie, and the family was doing, you know, their thing. And when dinner was over, my sister-in-law was in the kitchen with me, helping me clean the dishes. And I always, when people said, oh, did you make your own pie crust? I just always said, oh, no, you know, easy as pie. That's a lie. I, you know, I always just bought Pillsbury pie crust that came in the box. And I said, taste just as good. It's fine. And so when my sister-in-law, and there was like this little competition always sort of between obviously all of us siblings. And so when we were in the kitchen and she said the same thing everybody does, which is, oh, did you make your own pie crust? Out of my mouth, before I even knew it was coming out of my mouth, came the lie. Yes, I did. At the same time, I heard her hit the little can lid for the trash can, and I knew the Pillsbury red box was sitting on the top. She didn't say anything. She was a better person than I am. And she didn't say anything, and I didn't correct my lie, but I should have. We went on about our business, and I went out when they left town and bought myself a Cuisinart and learned how to make pie crust, so that from then on, I always made my pie crust from scratch so I wouldn't have to lie, I guess. And, you know, it took a long time for me to learn. Again, it was sort of that perseverance. It took me a long time to learn how to make a pie crust. I tried and tried and tried. I kept coming up with these dry blobs, or they'd be too wet and soggy, and then the crust would be tough. Or it would be so dry that when I rolled it out, I ended up with like a Frankenstein crust and, you know, all pieced together. And so it was just really over time with practice. And even still, I mean, it's funny. Last night I was making a pie crust and I was using a new recipe because I wanted to just try a couple of things at this other recipe I had from Food 52. You know, they had this recipe. I thought I'm going to try that pie recipe just because it was a little different. pie crust recipe. And I was, you know, testing to see how it was coming, the dough was coming together. And I thought I could add a little more water. And then I was always that like fine line between too much and too little. And I realized even then I'm like, I'm still trying to find that perfect moment when I know exactly when it comes together. And, you know, I think that comes, is the same for writing, as you feel like, oh, I think I've got it. And then you might try one more draft and add a little more of something and it's not quite right. Or it feels like maybe this is it. And then sometimes you go too far and it's not, you know, it went, you took out the things you shouldn't have taken out. And so, yeah, I feel like it's a constant learning process. I think writing is too. I'm always learning more. And I mentioned my pie guru in the book. She's the person who I have the lemon meringue pie, Kate McDermott. And she wrote Art of the Pie, which is also a memoir and cookbook. And I'm taking an online class with her again on Sunday for tartan. I can never say it right. It's French. I don't know French either. And I'm studying that too. So anyway, yeah, that's what I think pie crust is, sort of that metaphor again of trying and trying and, you know, just keep learning the process. I think that's why I like writing, is you keep learning.
It's amazing. Amy, thank you. Thank you for sharing your secrets. Thank you for this great book. Thank you for inspiring people to write. I think that is such a, it's such an important role people play, because what people produce is so important and then goes on to help so many other people. So to be the person ushering that work along in any stage of the journey is something that I think is really important. So anyway, I love what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Zibby. This is a lot of fun and I appreciate all your great questions and letting me go on and on.
So. No, I loved it. I was like, oh, great. I'll just sit here and listen. This is amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Hope to cross paths again. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.